What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 98. Today, we're going to be doing a sugar comparison. So, we're going to be comparing white sugar to brown sugar to agave sugar and coconut sugar to find out what's the difference and what's the healthiest sugar you can use. You know, if that's something you're still including in your diet. But first, we're going to do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week going?
I guess it's bad news. It's a little disappointing news. The 100-miler that I've been training for, that got canceled. All the events that are going on at that park pretty much for the rest of the year have been canceled. So, I mean, that's a little disappointing. I did have another race that I was going to do instead. There was like a 50-miler. That was like a really tough 50-miler. But then that one just got postponed back to November. And I don't want to keep this training going for another 4 months when I've already been doing this training all year long already. So I'm just going to start my off season now, give my body a nice little break, and then start my training up for next year, starting in probably like mid-October, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't bank on doing any races this year. It seems like everything's going to shit and it's not going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, the one in Auburn, they pushed it from mid-September to mid-November, and I don't even know if that's going on. And my goal for this year was to run a 100-miler, not a 50-miler. So that's even if I were to do it, that would screw up my entire timeline for next year. I mean, there's always a good chance that I can just keep training and not get injured or do anything like that. But I'm not really trying to risk that, so I'm just going to take a little bit of time off, give my body some time to heal, and then just start working my way back up again.
Yeah, I think that's smart, because I think I was talking to somebody about it recently, how the type of workouts you do, the type of training you do, and even the races you do aren't particularly healthy. Like, running 100 miles is super hard on the body, so for you keeping up training to do that, it would be extremely difficult and super specific. Like, you lifting weights in a certain way isn't beneficial. You gaining weight in any sort of way isn't beneficial towards that goal, you know?
Yeah, your body needs breaks. I mean, like, you look at any sort of sport, they have an off season. You know, like, so your body needs to take a break. I mean, even if it is something, like, I get running's not, like, the healthiest thing, but personally, I don't think it's that bad because I find my long runs to be kind of like meditation.
Sure.
Like, those aren't, I mean, they are stressing me out physically, but, like, mentally, I'm getting such a benefit from it. So I don't think it's, like, quite as bad as, like, as it could be for other people. If I was just out there hating my life while I was running, that'd be a completely different story. But yeah, I just don't want any overuse injuries to come up. My body feels great. I want it to stay that way. So taking a couple months off and then just starting back up. I like the timeline that I had originally for this year. It was like a 50K in February, a 50-miler in April, then a 100-miler in June. So as long as everything gets settled like by next year, which, damn, I hope it is.
I hope so.
Like,
I know.
That's a pretty good timeline for me.
Yeah, okay. No, that's cool. Yeah, that sucks it was canceled, but, I mean, everything's canceled, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really complain. There's people that have it a lot harder than I do right now.
Yeah, that's true. So, okay, so this week, the article of the week, which you can find on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, is titled Blood Iron Levels Could Be Key to Slowing Aging, Gene Study Shows. So this was an article I pulled up that I found pretty interesting, and all these articles a week are never really that intimidating. You know, they're never like 20 pages long where you need an hour to read it. This was literally, I think, maybe 2 pages max. You can read it in 5 minutes, so check it out if you're interested. But I picked it up because in the carnivore community, or even the any sort of diet that promotes consumption of a lot of red meat, one of the negative things you'll hear about it is iron. They'll say, oh, you're eating too much iron. But it's never been shown that all this shit causes or happens when you're on a carnivore diet. It just doesn't. But that's kind of besides the point. But this study showed, it was pretty much a big like meta-analysis, hundreds of thousands of people. It looked at their blood iron levels, and it showed that blood iron that's too high can cause like different conditions and can just not be healthy, leading to a shortened lifespan. And also iron that's too low can do pretty much the same thing. And it was pretty interesting. Didn't you think it was interesting?
Yeah, the direct quote that you're talking about is blood iron is affected by diet, and abnormally high or low levels are linked to age-related conditions. So basically, just like everything else in our body, there's that Goldilocks zone. Like, you want your blood iron not to be too high, not to be too low. You want it to be just right. The big problem that I had with it, and it's the same problem that you had, is that they only talked about the negatives that are associated with it being too high. They didn't talk about any of the problems with it being too low. And they unfairly just attack red meat for saying that's going to be the reason that it's too high, and that red meat leads to high iron, which is going to increase or decrease your lifespan, which is completely unfair.
Yeah, it is unfair. It paints red meat in a real negative light, and it kind of, I don't know, it does a lot of, I don't know what the fallacy is, but it just goes off the old knowledge that, like, the diet heart hypothesis, that high cholesterol in the blood is caused by high fat diets, and that leads to heart disease, and it presumes that's true, and then it bases all its conclusions off that bad hypothesis, and we know that's not true. The diet heart hypothesis promoted by Ansel Keys has been proven false numerous times. High fat diets are not unhealthy, high cholesterol is not unhealthy, and it does not lead to heart disease. So it basing its conclusions off a shitty hypothesis really stood out to me. Now, does having high blood iron cause issues? Yes, it does. But that's caused by metabolisms that's not functioning properly. And that how it happens when you eat a shitty diet. When you're eating a properly formulated diet, which is obviously going to be low carb and high in animal foods, high iron doesn't happen. There's been plenty of people on the carnivore diet which eat tons of red meat every day. I'm one of them included, eat nothing but red meat for years now, and I've gotten blood work done, and my iron is perfectly natural. It's not elevated at all. And I'm talking, I've eaten, I don't know, upwards of 5 to 8 pounds of red meat a day. If anyone was going to have high iron from red meat, it would be me. But that doesn't happen. Your gut modulates how much iron it absorbs, and just being healthy regulates the amount of iron in our blood. So it's not the red meat that's causing it. It's the maladapted nutrition that you're trying to feed yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. But the way you get high iron is through a dysfunctional metabolism, not from eating iron-rich foods. And how do you cook most of your meat? Is it with a cast iron skillet?
Cast iron skillet, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's even another source of iron.
That's a double dip, exactly. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the biggest problem I had is, like, they didn't even talk about... So they talked about high iron. And them connecting those dots is like a really big stretch, because that's not what they studied. They didn't study red meat and having like lifespans.
So not
those,
at all.
Them connecting those dots shouldn't even be relevant. I don't even know why they made that. But I mean, with that being said, like, they didn't talk about any of the problems with low iron. Like, low iron results in anemia. That means too little oxygen for the body, which means more glycolysis, less fat oxidation. That means more oxidative stress. And that leads to pretty much every single chronic disease out there. I mean, like, we just did the whole keto series on all these different diseases and why keto is better. The main reason that keto is better is that it's less glycolysis, more fat oxidation, and less oxidative stress. You can't do fat oxidation with little oxygen. Like, you need oxygen to be present in that scenario. So low iron is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, and it's just, it's sad that this article, and like I said, it's not a complex article, it's pretty straightforward, but somebody would read that and instantly just believe it all to be true. When parts of the study are true, parts of this paper are true, that when your iron's low, it's a problem, when your iron's high, it's a problem, but the other part of the paper saying red meat causes this is not true.
No, they don't have the... This study didn't look at that, so they shouldn't be able to say that at all. And, yeah, that's just... They're connecting a bunch of dots that, like, shouldn't be connected. I don't really know how they made that gigantic leap.
But, yeah, so that was article this week. Check it out. Read it if you're interested in it. You know, you can send us an email or reach out on social media if you want to talk about it more. These little articles I find really interesting, and that's why I want to do this now with the podcast, like the article of the week. And it just keeps, I don't know, keeps those mental tools sharp, you know, being critical with papers and trying to find the truth. Because there's truth in damn near everything, but you can't believe everything these papers say.
Yeah, and this is a really straightforward one. It's really easy to read. There's not a lot of gigantic words or anything like that in there. So if you're learning, or if you're new to, like, reading studies, this is a pretty good way for you to get introduced to that type of thing. Because, hey, reading studies is extremely difficult. So, like, this is a good way that if you want to learn how to just interpret these studies better, this is, like, a good way for, like, pretty much anybody to get started.
Yep, that's true. So, okay, so let's get to the topic of the podcast today, which is all going to be about sugar. And this is actually inspired by a friend of mine who had a conversation with her dad, who is a diabetic, and mentioned, I guess he bought brown sugar over white sugar because on the label it said natural. And he was like, oh, this must be better than normal sugar because it's natural. And I was like, oh, like, no, it's not true. Like, I knew that. I knew it was pretty much all the same. But then she was kind of like, well, what's the difference between all these different types of sugars? And I was like, oh, I guess I should probably do a podcast on that to break down what's really going on with all these different types of sugar. I decided to do white sugar, coconut sugar, agave sugar, and brown sugar. Just because, I mean, I know there's a million different types of sugar out there. But the differences is going to be the same that we're talking about now. So if you, you know, listen to the end and hear the conclusion, you can base, you know, the right decision when you go shopping, you know, what's better. And the first thing I wanted to touch on is, like, the whole organic label, the whole natural label. If you see a box of sugar, I don't care if it's brown, white, coconut, agave, whatever it is, one says natural or organic, and the other one doesn't. From a nutritional standpoint, they're the exact same. The sugar is going to have the same minerals, the same effect on blood sugar, the same effect on insulin, so there's no, like, nutritional difference at all. And you know that. You know that term natural on a box is really BS.
Yeah, I mean, you can pretty much throw natural on almost anything. I know we kind of talked about this a little bit. I think it was on our Doritos podcast, like 50 episodes back, versus like natural flavoring versus artificial flavoring. They're pretty much all artificial flavoring. Like, the word natural doesn't really mean what you think it means.
Yeah.
Because it's such a broad term, it can mean so many different things. Is sugar cane, like, is that one of the, like, heavy sprayed, like, crops with pesticides? Like, I don't really know. I've never really come across that.
It is, yeah. Well, it's just one of, honestly, any major crop in that, like, is produced in America is going to be heavily sprayed. Just like coffee, just like corn, you know, wheat, it's all sprayed pretty similar. Yeah.
Okay, so organic does make a bit of a difference from a pesticide standpoint.
Yeah, from a pesticide standpoint. And then you need to look at, even non-organic pesticides have their issues. And actually, I think that's a podcast I want to do in the future as well, because there is, again, just like everything, there's more nuance to that argument, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But so the big difference with these sugars isn't going to be the label organic versus natural, nothing like that. It's really going to be with the glycemic index. And so that's a marker of how much a certain food elevates your blood sugar. And a glycemic index value of 55 or less is considered low, and values of 70 or more are considered high. And they base this scale using glucose as, like, the base measure. So pure glucose has a glycemic index of 100. So that's kind of their scale. That's just pure starch. That's what glucose is. So we'll start with white table sugar. That's the first sugar we'll look at. This is also referred to as sucrose a lot of times. So if you see sucrose on a label or in some sort of study, they're literally just talking about white table sugar. It's a stuff we're all very familiar with. And this sugar is 50% glucose and 50% fructose. And it has a glycemic index of 63. And this is made from sugar cane or sugar beets. And this is, like, classic. They boil the shit down. They evaporate all the water. You get sugar. Is it highly processed? Yes. Is it sweet? Yes. Is it delicious? Yes. Is it in every highly processed food? Yes, it is. You know what I mean? Everybody knows what white table sugar is.
Yeah, honestly, you don't even need to put white sugar or table sugar. If you just call that sugar, that's like my go-to. That's just what I think of.
Yeah, that's true. And so the next one is going to be brown sugar. And this is pretty much exactly like white sugar. It's a mixture of white sugar and molasses. And molasses is really just like really boiled down sugar. It's pretty much a sugar on top of sugar, to be honest. And that molasses is what's responsible for like the darker color, and it's slightly increased nutritional value. And it also has a different GI glycemic index value of 64. And again, not that much. Normal sugar is 63. And so brown sugar has slightly higher calcium, iron, and potassium. But however, like the amounts of these minerals in brown sugar are so insignificant that it's not a good source of any vitamins or minerals. And that's true for all these sugars. They're not going to be nutritionally dense foods at all. They're too refined. They're simply carbohydrates. That's it. Any sugar that says, oh, it's a good source of potassium, it's a good source of magnesium, maybe if you ate 5 pounds of it. But guess what? At that point, you shouldn't be worried about the magnesium. You know what I mean? You're going to be diabetic as shit, you know?
So that molasses is basically just a food coloring agent?
Yeah, that's exactly what you can think of it, yeah. Yeah, like I said, from a nutritional standpoint, it's the same as white sugar. It just tastes a little different and has different properties when used, like during baking. Since brown sugar does contain a little more water than white sugar, that's why bakers would know this. I don't know a lot about baking. I've never baked in my life, but they use, you know, some recipes call for white sugar, some recipes call for brown sugar, and that kind of revolves around if you want something a little more dense or you want something a little more, like, fluffy and flaky. So that's just what that's about. So just to finish with those two, they're very similar. People think something about brown sugar, even if it has natural on the label, it's, like, safer or healthier than white sugar. It's not. It tastes a little different. It has a little different properties in baking, but it's the exact same sugar.
Yeah, you're getting a little bit of vitamins or minerals, but the cost of what, like, all the damage that you're getting from the sugar doesn't make up for the slight amount of vitamins or minerals. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems, what's the rule? There isn't much of a benefit if any at all.
Yeah, I would say there's none, but yeah. So the next sugar I wanted to touch on is coconut sugar, and this one's a little more, I guess, new. Because, you know, coconuts are real big in the low-carb community because, you know, coconut oil is a very healthy, like, fruit oil. And it kind of jives both with low-carb animal-based and low-carb plant-based. Like, coconuts get a pass in every community damn near. So that's why coconut sugar has been real popular with a lot of health foods. They'll say, you'll see it on the label, be like, oh, use coconut sugar, not table sugar, not white sugar. Like, it's some big-ass difference. And I'm going to show you it's not a huge difference, but let's just break that down. So coconut sugar is made from the sap of flower buds from the coconut palm tree. It's not actually made from coconuts, which I don't think a lot of people know. They think, like, I don't know, you break down coconuts and you get sugar, but you don't. The sap is boiled over moderate heat to evaporate most of its water content. And then the final product is coconut sugar, which is kind of caramel color and tastes very similar to brown sugar. And chemically speaking, much of the coconut sugar is identical to white sugar, but it's about like 70 to 79% sucrose, which is again 50% glucose, 50% fructose. The rest is made up of individual molecules of fructose and glucose. And when it comes to calories and carbohydrate content, there's no difference at all. Like, you know, each gram of carbohydrates is 4 calories. It's the same exact thing. So there's no difference from a calorie standpoint. And coconut sugar is often hyped as retaining, like I said earlier, many minerals from the sap, like especially potassium. And it's true that 100 grams of coconut sugar contains about 1 gram of potassium, which is nearly a quarter of your daily, like FDA, or excuse me, RDA, which is recommended daily allowance. But 100 grams of coconut sugar is 25 teaspoons. Can you find any better way to get a gram of potassium? Any ideas?
I mean, meat would be a good way. Avocado would be a great way. I mean, even a banana, you're not going to get that much sugar in it.
Exactly. Yes, there's a million different ways to get a gram of potassium rather than using 25 teaspoons of coconut sugar, right? So yeah, it's true that coconut sugar does contain a little more potassium, but at the dosages we're going to use it at, which would be, you know, 1 or 2 teaspoons, you're not getting enough potassium to do anything. So why even count it? I would just count it as zero. Coconut sugar does have a low glycemic index. So it has a glycemic index of 35. And remember, white sugar and brown sugar are around that 63, 64 range. So coconut sugar doesn't elevate blood sugar as much as table sugar. That's usually interpreted as a good sign. I'm going to talk about why I don't think that is the best measure in a minute, but just keep that in mind. So coconut sugar does have a lower glycemic index. And that's a big difference between coconut sugar and white sugar. It's a lower glycemic index. So let's touch on agave sugar.
Before we move on to that, I was just doing the quick like math in my head. For you to get your daily allowance of potassium from sugar or from coconut sugar, you'd have to consume 1,600 calories from sugar. So 1,600 calories of coconut sugar will give you your daily allowance of potassium. Yeah, that's not a good thing at all. That's a ridiculous amount. So you're creating so many more problems than you are solving by trying to do that.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know that's on the labels of a lot of these health foods. They promote that, even though they shouldn't, because it's misinformation and it's just misleading. It makes people think they're making some sort of health-conscious decision when really they're not. So let's touch on agave sugar. So agave is interesting, actually. So, because depending on how it's processed, agave can contain 55 to 90% fructose. And if you didn't know, out of the two sugars, fructose and glucose, fructose is what gives the sugars the sweet taste. That's what you like. It's the fructose. If you had a pure glucose powder, it wouldn't taste like anything. It would taste very plain. Like, if you ever, boiled a potato and licked a plain potato, did it taste sweet? No, right? Because that's all starch. That's all glucose. But if you ever just go and lick, like a cherry or a strawberry, of course you're going to taste the sweetness, and that comes from the fructose. So since agave is upwards of 90% fructose, it can make it very, very sweet. Most agave nectar is produced from the blue agave plant grown in desert regions like the hilly areas of Mexico. The syrup is extracted from the honey water found at the core of the plant, filtered, heated, and then processed to make a thicker nectar you see at the store. And the media has hyped up agave because of its low glycemic index. So it's so sweet because it has so much fructose that its glycemic index is 17. And that's due to its high fructose content. And I'll go into it now, just why I don't think glycemic index is the best marker for the health of a sugar. And that's really because it's deceiving, because it just revolves around, we've done this on the diabetes podcast. I think we did one like how to reverse diabetes part one and part two. So if you're interested in just sugar metabolism and really what's going on there, go ahead and listen to those podcasts. They're, 20 or 30 back now. But the world is focused on blood sugar because we know how to control that with insulin. And that's why these values, like glycemic index, is so valued. Because, if it's really high, we can treat it with insulin. And insulin is just, it's a shit marker for health. But I'm going to go on a whole tangent about that. I should stop myself. But to go on why fructose is bad and why having a sugar high in fructose, it's because fructose, or at least the fructose that makes it into our blood supply, is only metabolized by the liver. And so it puts a ton of strain on the liver. Glucose, on the other hand, gets metabolized by every cell in our body. So it can kind of spread the load out. Our small intestines can convert fructose to glucose as it absorbs it, but this function is limited and can be overwhelmed by too much fructose consumption. So think of drinking like a soda or eating a highly processed food with tons of added sugar, like a donut. So eating stuff like this or drinking things like that, you eat a lot of fructose in excess, and it puts strain on our liver, similar to drinking alcohol. Like, it's damn near the exact same thing. And that's why non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is linked to a high-carb diet. It's a stress that this extra fructose really puts on our liver. Like, basically, you eat fructose in excess, and our liver turns that into fat. And then your liver has two choices. Either it ships it out so the rest of the body can either store it or burn it, or it's stored locally in the liver. And storing fat in our internal organs is one of the key steps to develop diabetes. So recommending a sugar that promotes fat storage in our internal organs makes no sense.
Oh, yeah, not at all. I mean, they didn't even know that you could get fatty liver disease from anything but alcohol up until somewhat recently. That's why they have this distinction of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. They used to only believe fatty liver disease was only caused by alcohol. That's just because, like, a high-carb diet was never a thing up until fairly recently in our history. And just to kind of go back to something that you were mentioning earlier about agave and how much fructose it contains, most people understand that high fructose corn syrup is bad. Most people have heard that, they can connect those dots. High fructose corn syrup is bad. Agave has more fructose than high fructose corn syrup.
By a mile.
Yeah, so like, just think of like how bad that is, but yet somehow this is promoted as a health food or as a healthy alternative to sugar, which it is definitely not.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's just, again, on the label, it's going to say natural, and that's going to give it like a pass, like, oh, it must be better than high fructose corn syrup, which sounds like something is made in a lab.
Yeah, it can say natural, low glycemic index, so you think like you're doing the right thing, but it's like, no, you're actually causing yourself a lot more harm by consuming this than you would think.
Yeah, and this is a different kind of aspect of this podcast. I wasn't going to go into it too deeply, but our intestines are able to process fructose and turn it into glucose as it absorbs it. And that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of these like epidemiological studies which kind of point out that fruit, which is high in sugar, don't cause a lot of these metabolic conditions. And then that leads people to say that, oh, sugar's not that bad. Look, they eat fruit, nothing happens, they're not fat, they're not sick, it's fine. But really, the thing with fruit is fruit from a whole... Now, I'm not talking orange juice. I'm not talking apple juice. That's completely different. That might as well be soda. But eating like a banana or whatever, an apple, where you're getting it whole and you're getting the sugar, which again is highly... There's fructose in fruit. That's one of the reasons why it's called fructose. And it's why fruit is sweet. But you get fiber with it. So you're not getting a ton of fructose. It doesn't overload your small intestines. And also, the fiber delays digestion. And time matters. So if you give your intestines enough time, it can metabolize all that fructose. It can turn the vast majority of it to glucose. So now that glucose is spread throughout the body, every cell can use it. Not a lot of fructose actually hits our liver. That's one of the reasons why fruit comes out as healthy in a lot of these studies. Now, hey, if you go eat 5 pounds of strawberries, good luck. Your liver's going to feel that. But a handful of berries here and there, banana here and there, apple here and there, it's really not going to be a problem. And that's one of the reasons why. People don't understand how much our intestines kind of regulate what our body absorbs.
Yeah, just like another thing to kind of add on top of that is you could drink like 19 apples worth of juice, like no problem. Like you could do that, but how many people could eat like 19 apples like in a day? Like you, that would be so hard to do. Like yeah. You would eat like one or two and you'd just be like, all right, I'm done with this. But just drinking fruit juice, you could drink that all day and you wouldn't even feel a thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good point. So the processing of those fruits make it a problem, you know, and the processing even of these plants, like the agave plant, make it a problem when they extract the sugar and it's so high in fructose. So ideally, you want your carb sources to come mainly from glucose. And like I said, that's because glucose can be used by every cell in our body, not just our liver. So our intestines, our brain, our muscles, every cell can use glucose. And so with that in mind, in my opinion, the best sugar to use is going to be the one with the least amount of fructose in it. And in this comparison of these four sugars, that's white sugar, which is only 50% fructose. And I think that's going to surprise a lot of people.
What was brown sugar?
Brown sugar was about the same. It could be a little bit more from the molasses.
So either brown sugar or
white sugar. Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people would assume, since those are the ones you find like in the 5 pound bags that cost a dollar, they appear to be highly processed. They're gonna be like, oh, these can't be good for you. But you see this one jar of agave syrup that's $20 and says natural on it, they're gonna think that's always the best way to go. And I'm here to say that's not true.
Yeah, definitely not. Fructose just hasn't been demonized. I think that the time is gonna be coming. Like, I don't think it's gonna be this darling forever, but yeah, as of right now, like, fructose does get a pass in a lot of food labels for the time being.
Yeah. So all the extra vitamins and minerals, the low glycemic index, the naturalness, I put that in quotes, hyped up by these other sugars, especially coconut and agave, it's really BS. Like, these sugars are all sweet, and they all will cause your blood sugar to rise in various ways, so they should be treated the same. Like, coconut sugar shouldn't get a pass, agave sugar shouldn't get a pass, and people should understand that fructose is one hell of a sugar. If it's eaten in moderation, where, like I said, through whole foods, it's really not that big of a deal. You'd have to eat, like Tom said, 20 apples. Like, good luck getting that down. But when it's processed, it really becomes a problem. And sugar and high insulin that's caused, like, the result of it is really the root cause of damn near everything. So that's really the problem there. So I would just say, if you're going to use sugar in your diet, if you're going to use sugar in some sort of, I don't know, baking plan, go with white, go with brown. First off, it's way cheaper. You can get pounds of it for damn near pennies on the dollar. And from a health standpoint, it contains the most glucose, which, in my opinion, spreads the load, is a good thing for our bodies.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. I did not know that at all about the coconut sugar, that it's not made from coconut.
Yeah, there's nothing but fat in coconut. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that made sense, like, once I read that I was like, okay, yeah, because coconut's mostly fat and fiber with a little bit of, like, carbohydrate. I mean, generally, coconuts aren't, like, the sweetest thing out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it made total sense.
So, yeah, so that's it. That's what's going on with sugar. I thought about touching on artificial sweeteners on this podcast, but that's a whole different topic, and
there's so many of them out there.
Yeah, there's a million, right? And I think there's a lot of misinformation with artificial sweeteners or low-calorie sweeteners, things like stevia or erythritol or monk fruit, something like that. So eventually I'll touch on a podcast like that, but for now, if you are going to go with sugar, which you probably shouldn't, you probably should be eating low carb. The vast majority of people on this planet should be eating low carb. Then, yeah, I would just go with white or brown sugar.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just kind of summed it up perfectly. Like, use it as a treat, and that's it. Don't try it. I mean, just because some of them try to quote themselves as being healthy, they're still far from being healthy. So don't rely on them for any sort of nutrients or minerals.
Yep, exactly. Well, all right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, and we probably should have mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, but me and Tyson are both reading a book called Breed by James Nestor, and we're going to be talking about that in the future, probably in the next couple of weeks. We're going to do at least one podcast on it, maybe two or three. Just kind of depending on how much information we really want to get out of it. But it's a great resource. So if you guys want to kind of get a better idea of some topics that we're going to be talking about in the near future, check out the book Breathe by James Nestor. I sent a link out on our Facebook page. And I also sent a link out on our Facebook page to the study that we mentioned earlier. But yeah, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.